You are listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of March 29th, 2021, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories. Health needs assessment underway. A gift can make all the difference. New look for community schools. And a proclamation for a Sunderland poet.
Every 3 years, the Southwestern Vermont Medical Center conducts a survey of the health needs of the region it serves, which covers not only Bennington County, but extends down to the Berkshires in Massachusetts and across into neighboring New York State. While you might think the main mission of the hospital is to provide treatment for those in need of it, increasingly hospitals are looking at the bigger picture of healthcare needs and how attention to wellness can help keep people out of the hospital in the first place. The COVID emergency has also thrown this into sharp relief. Living conditions, mental health, housing, and even transportation needs can have an impact on the person's overall well-being. The medical center is in the middle of a series of 5 online community forums to hear from area residents divided by the coverage area, and the first one kicked off on March 23rd with a focus on the North Shire. Information and opinions will be collected using a digital survey as well as through the series of virtual community forums. Rory Price, SVMC's Coordinator of Population Health and Grant Administrator, conducted the North Shire discussion, and afterwards we had a chance to ask her about her takeaways from that.
You mentioned it was a pretty broad survey of the health needs that are facing the North Shire. So some things that were mentioned were affordable housing, substance use, and then kind of the merger of those two topics in the form of recovery housing and the lack of availability of recovery housing in the North Shire. Child care was mentioned, as well as adverse childhood experiences that might be exacerbated by COVID this past year. So things like domestic violence or abuse within the household that can impact a child and really impact the trajectory of their life. So this group that we met with last night was really focusing on these such important topics, and I was glad that everyone felt comfortable sharing those things that might be facing their community. At the end of the night, we did have a poll to try to kind of put a number on what folks wanted to see prioritized for the coming years. So overwhelmingly, mental health was the top choice of attendees at the North Shire Forum. And I don't want to preempt results for other areas, but I know that across our health service area, that is something that every community is facing. The group also prioritized affordable housing, substance use, and transportation as topics that they would like to see addressed in the coming years. So our process now is to continue these forums in our other service areas and then kind of build a broad picture of what might an action plan look like across our whole health service area while still keeping in mind that certain geographic regions within that broader area might need a more tailored approach.
The results of this year's survey differed slightly from the results they obtained in their previous community survey conducted 3 years ago, she said.
It was a similar conversation. So our last community health needs assessment took place in 2018. And the 3 priorities that were identified across our whole health service area were access to care. So within that, we bundled access to primary care as well as access to any specialists that might be needed. Substance use and mental health as sort of a combined topic to address. And then healthy behaviors and obesity was the 3rd priority area. So our conversation last night, while it was similar in content, the end result was a little bit different from previous years in that transportation and housing took, I think, a stronger, identified as a higher priority than they have been in the past.
Surveys have since been held for the Berkshires, Deerfield Valley, and the Hoosick Falls, New York area, and the final one will focus on Bennington and the South Shire on April 6th. You can visit svhealthcare.org/classes-events to register to attend that community forum. A report summarizing the findings will be made available later this summer or early fall. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
This is the critter that's really responsible right here. This is Charlie. Can Charlie come out in the ice and say, say hi to you? Okay.
We're pleased to be here today to recognize a pretty important donation from the Social House, Union Underground, and also Charlie's Coffee House, which is Bill and Linda Dronzik. And they've allowed us to create two brand new programs to the rink this year.
So today we're going to bring all the participants from the new programs, which is the figure skating class, as well as the hockey introductory program for girls. And we're going to have, I think, all of them today. So they all would like to show Bill and Linda.
Yep.
They are going to be coming today, how much they've learned through these programs, and show them a little bit of the practice, and also give them a little gift as an appreciation of their generosity making these programs happen for them.
So the reason why we started these two programs, two different programs, one is the Girls Learn to Play Hockey. The numbers of girls playing hockey in this district has been in steady decline, so we were looking for a way to arrest that. And by being able to make the program free, we were able to attract 15 girls who are brand new to hockey for this year. Then the figure skating program, we were able to get 13 people introduced to figure skating. So the impact has been huge from these donations.
Yeah, a lot of families wouldn't be able to bring their children to participate and play hockey, learn hockey. And through this program, as Jason said, there's 15 girls that never skated before, and they've learned hockey, they learned to skate, and they're here today.
Yep. So. And that's super important once you start to get into high school hockey. If there's no feeders coming through, no girls who start at a younger age, has a big impact on the Burren Burton program. So there's two factors. One is being able to make it free. The other one is just to provide the environment for girls to come out and just be with girls. Because most of the girls who have learned to play hockey around here have probably played with the boys most of the time. Well, some girls, they're quite okay to play with the boys. Some girls need to just be with other girls. So that part has been really, really encouraging.
And we're going to be introducing these programs going forward. They're going to be part of the rink's core programs structure. And it took a little bit of picking it up, but we're happy that these programs are a stable schedule on the rinks every week, and going forward, and we're going to have them every year, hopefully.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So again, big thanks to Union Underground, Charlie's Coffee House, and Social House for making these programs possible.
Yeah, and thanks everybody for participating.
Most of us probably went to schools where you arrived, unpacked your books, and proceeded through a schedule of classes, from English to history, math and science, and so forth. School was school, and when the school day ended, we went out to play, or take part in sports, or some other extracurricular activity, or went home to study. But for many students, that also left parents scrambling to arrange dental appointments, or after-school activities, or additional educational supports. Community schools began to emerge as a result, offering services that went beyond the purely academic. One such local example is the Molly Stark School in Bennington, which began to offer a much broader array of services under Sue McGuire when she became the principal there in the mid-1990s.
It was a typical elementary school, but it was struggling. It had a very high poverty rate. I had taught there for 15 years. So I knew that we cared about kids and we wanted to do it right. I also knew our test scores were extremely low. We had kids that were struggling that didn't have health care, that were struggling with mental health issues, and families that were struggling. And so the interesting thing is I didn't have any idea what a community school was. What happened was Doug Racine, who was lieutenant governor back then, called me one day and said, I heard you have a community school down there. And I had no idea what he was talking about. So he said, I'd like to come down and see it. You know, Governor Dean's interested in it. So I invited him down, and then I quickly looked up what a community school was. That's true. I had no idea. We were doing the things that made sense to help kids and families. And that's what a community school is. It's the opportunities that we would offer our own children and expect and demand for our own children. But many kids don't have those opportunities. And many kids have to choose, their parents have to choose, do we bring them to a dentist, or do we bring them to a doctor, or do we give them some opportunities to do things that are a little fun? What they have to make decisions, because they can't do it all. They don't have the funding to do it all, and the know-how sometimes to connect with it. Parents love their kids. It doesn't necessarily mean that they know how to navigate middle-class life, which is what we're asking to make sure every kid has. So I looked up full-service schools, community schools, and I found this book by Joy Dreyfus, who was the mother of community schools. She's since passed away, but I connected with her, and we ended up writing a book together. And she came up to Molly Stark, and that's where we started. But we had already started many different resources and supports and opportunities for kids. And then I found out this is a community school. So I never said, oh, let's start a community school.
Now the community school idea is at the heart of a new piece of legislation being considered by Vermont lawmakers in the still virtual State House. H-106, as the bill is called, has been passed out of the House of Representatives and has crossed over to the state Senate, where it's under consideration by the Senate Education Committee. The lead sponsor is Representative Kathleen James, who is a member of the House Education Committee and represents the towns of Manchester, Arlington, Sandgate, and Sunderland in the state legislature. She described what's in the bill and how it might be implemented if the bill is voted through.
In 2019, I attended a national education policy conference out in Denver, you know, as part of my work with the legislature. And I signed up for an afternoon workshop on community schools, which I'd never heard of, being new to the education committee and new to the legislature. And it was a really inspirational afternoon. There were stories of community schools accomplishing all these fantastic things, you know, with great statistics on outcomes in cities, you know, Baltimore, Philadelphia, LA, Chicago. And I came home and reached out to the Education Commission of the States and asked if they could send along information on community school models operating and succeeding in rural areas. And one of the examples they sent me as an example of sort of an early shining success or a pioneer on the community schools model was Molly Stark in Bennington. So I went down and visited and started to learn more about how community schools are really gaining traction around the country. I think there are about 5,000 identified community schools around the country right now. And with that basis, I introduced a bill to try to start a pilot program or a demonstration grant so that we could see, learn from how the model can help our schools and communities here. So it's a 3-year program, and it's funded with the so-called ESSER funds from the American Rescue Plan. So that's sort of the urgency or the impetus for trying to move this forward right now, which is that we can tap into one-time federal stimulus funds and not have to have a discussion about, you know, the education funds. So it sets aside $3.34 million in the significant amount of federal funding that's coming to the state to allow 10 eligible districts or supervisory unions to participate in a 3-year demonstration grant program. So in order to be eligible to apply, the district or SU has to have at least one public school that has 40% of students that qualify for free and reduced lunch. So that's sort of a proxy for measuring low-income students and families. So you need to meet that threshold in order to apply. It obviously applies only to public schools. And then there are a couple of other ways that the Agency of Education could consider somebody eligible, and that's if they, according to a federal definition, qualify for comprehensive support or for equity support, so schools that are otherwise identified as struggling.
The pilot program for community schools could be one way for schools that serve communities where there's a high need for many of the additional supports young learners can't always take for granted to meet those unmet needs. But there's a long way to go yet. For the Gnat TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Lucy Prince was a Black American poet and writer who lived in Sunderland in the, I think it's like 1780s, 1790s. She was the first African American poet published,
right?
I believe, in the U.S. And she died on July 11th, 1821. So this would be the 200th anniversary of her death. So there was a thought circulating that maybe we could do like a town proclamation around that when we get closer to the actual time, and maybe in some way mention it, and I don't know, have a little buzz generated about the town, because this is a very unique individual for that time. She lived over near where the Sunderland Union Church is currently, on Hill Farm Road. That's where she lived.
Yeah, I just read something on her here recently.
I mean, there's a lot of factual unknowns and confusion around her whole life story. She originally came from, I think, Deerfield, Massachusetts, and then lived in Guilford, Vermont for a while before coming to Sunderland. And there's a certain amount of confusion about it. But her name is in the town records as being a resident in the 1810s, 1820s. So I don't know. It just seemed like that would be kind of a fun thing to do. And, like I say, you get a little buzz going on about Sunderland being something interesting and different.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Make Sunderland a destination.
Something like that, yeah. A hip place.
Yes. That'll be great.
All right, yeah, we'll look into that.
Okay.
Yeah, she died, yep. Died in Sunderland, so.
Is she buried in Sunderland, do you know?
Well, that's the other question that Jeff asked me, and every now and then I walk around through the cemetery and look at the names. I've never seen her headstone or anything like that for her.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's not the way to find out, right? I'm sure there are records for that. And it'd be great if she was, but I've never seen her headstone or anything, unfortunately.
Yeah, it didn't. Yeah. Okay. All right, yeah, we'll look into that. That would be great. Be kind of cool.
The other thought, just mention it while real quick. Jeff's thought, maybe a state proclamation would also be good. So I was wondering, may I contact our two state reps to see if we could push that idea forward?
We have three.
I don't mind.
We have three state reps.
Three state reps, yes, right, excuse me. I'll shoot an email out to the three of them and plant the seed.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.